Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Dave Solomon, thank you so much. Oh my gosh. Let's just talk about the wonders of doing this radio show from home. Thank God for Blog Talk Radio. Now, it's a good doggone thing we don't have any cameras here. You know, this Skype is good for a couple of different reasons, but look, when you're doing a radio show from home, you want to be comfortable. So I don't mind telling you that I'm sitting here in a towel today just because I can. Oh, it's a beautiful thing. So is life, getting better all the time. Fingers crossed, wishes heard, prayers said. Oh, let us tell you that next hour, the incredibly talented and lovely Veronica Nunn will join us. Yay! And there's so much to pass along to you in the way of good news. I can hardly stand it, honestly. Just saw Brian Auger and Jeff Gold the other night at the Hamilton in D.C. My gracious. There's just no words, really, to describe. So what I thought we'd do was, since we have a new rule about twofers, if a promised song isn't delivered on that day by way of promo on Facebook, we get a twofer of Groove School today, and we get a twofer of Brian Auger and Company right now on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Do enjoy this. This is Hybrid Jazz.
You're doing well from story.
All right, raise your hand and tell me if it gets better than Joe Sample, Layla Hathaway, and Kirk Whalum. The answer is no. I'll just say it for you, okay? Woo! 1999. One of those songs that when you first hear it, you never, ever forget it. And it stays in your head, not just for days or weeks, but years. When your life was low. And that is from Joe's album. Gosh, the song lives on. Just going back in time to think about that year. As a matter of fact, the album was released on April the 20th, 1999. If that date rings a bell for you, that was the same day as the Columbine High School massacre. So many people remember that date, and I don't know if the release of the album on that date interfered with record sales. You know, those kinds of things don't matter in comparison to what transpired that day. But let me tell you something. That particular song has such longevity and always will. And here's the thing. The song is certainly on the surface about someone who is telling, you're presuming, a lover that, hey, when there was a certain part of your life, you needed me, and now I see that you're running with the fast crowd, so I guess I don't matter anymore. And there's a lot of people that relate to that, for sure. But then my astounding friend Lori Lewis, who was the program director of WSMJ in Baltimore when I was working there, she said, how about this? How about someone getting that message from God? When your life was low, I see that you needed me. But now that things are going well, I'm out of the picture. That's a whole new spin, isn't it? Oh, my goodness. Layla Hathaway, just so you know, is playing the BB Jazz Festival in Huntington Beach, Cali, early in September. And then she's playing BB King's. So it's easy to remember that. Later on in the month, or is it early October? Go to her website and see LaylaHathaway.com. L-A-L-A-H. I always think of Daddy Donnie when I hear her voice. It's hard not to do that. And it's hard not to think of what he would be saying and doing in regard to his own career and his daughter's. Man, such a lot to consider. Joe Sample, gracious, what can you say about Joe? I'll tell you this, he's coming to our region very soon with the Creole Joe Band. Now, there's a new album involved, and some of the touring folks with him are pretty ridiculous. I'm trying to imagine Joe Sample with Ray Parker Jr. That's going to happen. He doesn't have a website. He's on PRA Records. So look up that information. He's certainly on Facebook. But get a sample, if you will, of where he is going to be and a taste, if you can find it. I think you can find the sample on Amazon. I'm trying to keep cryptic as far as the information I'm giving about Joe, and you'll hear about that. Not in this show, but on a later show. Keep a bookmark in that thought. All right, now. We heard Jeff Golub and Brian Auger with the Curtis Mayfield song, Pusher Man, from Train Keeps A-Rolling. And they did that song at the Hamilton on Sunday night. A very unusual, unique chemistry between Brian and Jeff. Brian Auger is as hilarious on stage as he was on this show last month. He's hilarious. He had people in the audience spitting out their drinks. That's the kind of hilarious he was. And here's Jeff, dry as anything, sitting on a stool, playing his guitar. And he looks over. Now, you know that Jeff is visually challenged now. He looks over in the direction of Brian, and says on the microphone, you can't believe anything this guy says. He lies all the time. So you have somebody who is effervescent and then somebody who's very low-key. It's just a sketch. And the music they turned out was something else. It was recorded for a radio cast that night, and we'll hear more about it. Suffice it to say that at the time of this broadcast right now, it's August 27th. That's when we're recording this on Blog Talk Radio. And have to be careful because Blues Jazz Radio picks up the shows from Blog Talk and runs them as an after-the-fact kind of situation. Tonight, Brian and Jeff are going to be at Spaghettini's in Seal Beach, and they're also going to be at Yoshi's in San Francisco. Please, if you get an opportunity, not only is it good to support them because they are both so unbelievable with their instruments, but also you get a chance to get a copy of Train Keeps Rolling signed. And Brian will sit next to Jeff and direct Jeff on where to sign the CD. It's just precious, I'm telling you. Jeff, when he was on the show, Jeff, I don't know what he was like when he was able to see, but he seemed to hold back a little. When I saw him on Sunday, it was as though we had been lifelong friends. Because it's a little intimidating maybe for him to be sitting there and not know who's coming up to him. And he has to get used to it all over again. But when he hears a familiar voice, he grasps on to you for dear life. It's a beautiful thing, honestly. So, we also heard Brian Auger and the Trinity, Maiden Voyage, from before 1969-1970 were the years for that. I could go on and on. Let's go on, please, because I love these two so much, and there's a lot to say. Veronica Nunn is going to be with us at the top of the hour, and we're pretty psyched about that because when Veronica is here, the show takes on a different sort of vibe entirely. So hold on for that. Someone that you need to know about is named Aaron Rhines. He is from the Baltimore area. My son and his dad saw him a few months ago playing around town. They couldn't wait to get home and tell Mama Bear about Aaron and how fantastic he was. Aaron was blown away that he heard this from two guys who make the rounds of music in town and know good music when they hear it. So, Aaron has a new CD. It's called Clear Skies. He got together with another buddy, Art Sherrod Jr., who's been on the show. They have done some great music. Art's on a few tracks. Aaron's got this unusual kind of mind. He has a song called Don't Get It Twisted. That's the song we're going to play for you right now on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Woohoo!
Meaning
that's what you do when you're in love. You talk all goofy nonsense. Oh, I love that song. I loved it when Mary J. Blige did it, and I love the way Gretchen Parlato does it. Oh, my. All that I can say. From the Lost and Found, a couple of years ago now. Hard to believe. 2011, a couple of years ago. Wow. Gretchen has some news. It's so exciting, and I wonder how this is going to affect her touring, but she is serious about it. Hold on for this. On the CD, you need to know that everybody who is of note in young jazz was on this project, helping their friend Gretchen out. Taylor Eichsti on piano, Kendrick Scott on drums, woo! Derek Hodge on bass, Dana Stevens on tenor sax, Alan Hampton on guitar and vocals. This is the young blood of jazz, seriously, man. And she has been running in that crowd. She's just so noteworthy. Well, here's how noteworthy she is. First of all, she's in another assembly, a trio called Tillery, with Rebecca Martin and Becca Stevens. They are doing workshops so that they can make sure that other singers are on their road to a wonderful career in jazz, if they should so choose. Now, I have to run this by you because this struck me as so crazy. I happened to notice that on Gretchen's music page on Facebook, somebody took issue with the fact that in L.A., Gretchen and company are charging $90 for the workshop. This person said, oh, I didn't know it was going to cost that much. What? What? If it was just Gretchen Parlato, it would be worth more than that. People need to get a grip. Look, times have been tough. That kind of stuff is clearing away. Just grab on to that little brass ring that you have, ride the carousel, and know that people need to be in a realistic frame of mind. You are going to get what you pay for, and if it's going to be a world-class master workshop featuring Gretchen Parlato and these two highly respected singers, it's going to be worth every penny. You just can't get involved into a business unless you're willing to invest a little bit of money to get someplace. Man, have we all learned this or no? We could talk all day about that. Secondly, this is the big news about Gretchen. She's joining the Manhattan School of Music. She's going to be on their jazz faculty. How cool is that? Your teacher, Gretchen Parlato? Whew. Man alive. This is a Monk Institute person who has across the board all the staffers and the board of directors so in love with that vocal ability that she has. Wayne Shorter, we'll get to more of him later, and Terrence Blanchard, and George Duke was also quite smitten with her voice. And if anybody recognized talent, it was George Duke. So congratulations to Gretchen. She's going to start in a matter of days. So awesome. Sonny Rollins, I'll string along with you. You can take the boy out of the Virgin Island roots, but you can't take the Virgin Island roots out of the man. His parents were both from VI, and you could tell with that little reggae beat, he would hear that music around the house all the time. Dancing in the Dark from 1987, that's the project. Sonny on tenor sax, Clifton Anderson on trombone, Mark Suskin on piano, Jerome Harris on electric bass and rhythm guitar, and Marvin Smitty Smith on drums. Sonny is going to be 83 in early September, and I just happened to see on his website that he conducted two recent interviews. I'm so tickled about that because he wasn't feeling well for a while. Always keep him in your thoughts and prayers, will you? Because there's just three left standing from that 1958 Great Day in Harlem photo. It's Sonny Rollins, Horace Silver, and Benny Golson still with us. We lost Marion McPartland last week, so she was the fourth one. And now It's just the trio. So I always am going to be thinking about them. Aaron Rhines, woohoo! That was really nice to play, Don't Get It Twisted, from Clear Skies. That is a single that is getting some attention on some charts, so you might want to get a little taste more of Aaron. He's on Facebook. It's on CD Baby. Interesting to note, Aaron, and I wanted to pass along something to you about him. Yeah, he started off at 5 on trumpet, then went to baritone horn, and then piano. He really has done some touring internationally, and he has his own record label, Ninth Galaxy Music. He's pushing a young lady named Opal Rose, who's a holistic practitioner as well as a wonderful singer. Now, check this out. Aaron is going to be with my friend Stephanie Reed, also known as Stephanie Sings, S-I-N-G-Z. Stephanie is also a holistic practitioner, and she is going to be part of her husband, the pastor, Medgar Reed. That's going to be a really cool shindig on the 31st of August at Reverend Medgar's church. It's raising awareness for mental health, and at least part of the proceeds are going to go to help community efforts to making sure that mental health is stressed in the African-American community. That's a very big deal. And Aaron Rhines and the Groove Unit are also going to be at the Phillips flagship huge restaurant on Water Street in D.C. this Thursday, the 29th of August, which, by the way, is Joy Hall's birthday. Please make note of that. It's Michael Jackson's birthday, Joy Hall's birthday from Cool Jazz Conversations. Make sure you tell Joy hello and happy birthday, even ahead of time. So, Aaron Rhines, right there with Arch Rod Jr., and Don't Get It Twisted. Aaron from the D.C. area, now living in Baltimore. Yoo-hoo! Good stuff. Aaron, I played it. Yay! He wanted to make sure he knew the time that it was going to get played and have his friends tune in. That's good stuff. Eric Essex. Even the very name conjures a visual that may have me drifting for a moment or two. Hold on. All right, it's passed. Eric Essex is one of the world's most handsome men, especially when he wears a suit and plays that red guitar. What he has done with Evolution, this new album that is just so phenomenal, produced by Kelvin Wooten, who has produced Anthony Hamilton, Mary J. Blige, there's that name again, and Jill Scott. Masterful chemistry with Kelvin and Eric. Eric had in mind how much he wanted to heal Birmingham, Alabama. So much transpired in Birmingham during the civil rights beginnings, and since we are celebrating 50 years of so much, and especially this week in D.C., the 50th anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech by Dr. King, Eric was mindful of all of that, and he wanted to convey hope and healing and how Alabama has changed since those far away but yet so close 50 years. This is Eric and Company, Path to Peace, from Evolution on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Perfect way to get to Veronica Nunn at the top of next hour. Let your mind be awash in this. Thank you. This is Hybrid Jazz.
My love life always got gone, and then I heard this robin song. My spirit had a broken wing until you taught my heart to sing. It snowed the day you came to me. I'd lost my inner melody. I could not break the blues of spring until you taught my heart to sing.
Voice I needed to hear. Honest to goodness, that voice makes me go back and then go forward and then makes me live fully present in the moment. And here's the thing about that song. Robin Song is what it's called, from the art of Michael Franks. Yesterday, this has never happened before. Now, usually my mom gives me a sign by way of a cardinal. So I see a cardinal from time to time in the backyard. Yesterday, a robin came to the window, and the robin wanted to get my attention. I've never seen this before. The robin came right up to the window, looked me in the eye, kind of banged its head against the window, jumped up on a chair in the back, and then on a ledge that we have, did that little routine back and forth, and then backed away, wasn't scared of me, backed away as if to say, I'll be back. So I'm thinking I better play this song by Veronica Nunn. The astounding talent, the singer, the writer, the podcaster, the blogger, the unbelievable presence that Michael Franks has known for over 20 years, and the educator and the person that I can really honestly say, I am so glad to be living in the same time. She's here with us right now. Veronica.
Hi, Trish. How are you?
I'm really good. And that happened, Veronica. Maybe you can explain why that Robin dropped by for a visit yesterday.
Well, I have a headache. I'm just letting you know that when I was banging up against your window, I hit my head a little too hard.
Well, thank God it was you.
Yeah, it was me. You know, I take many forms.
Well,
what a great story.
Really. And, you know, you want to know if that kind of situation presents itself. Okay, maybe the bird is hurt. But the robin didn't appear to be hurt at all. Maybe the bird was looking for food, which I attended to, but just got bored after a while and flew off. And I'm thinking, all right, you know what? Maybe I knew this person, but had to play Robin's song from the art of
Michael
Franks.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. Well, you know, that's musicians for you. You know, they hang around. They don't get the food, then they're off. They're off some for something else.
Honey, that's men in general, okay? Not to put them all in a category, but if you're going to talk male and musicians, that is the name of that tune.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, great story. I'm doing really well. Just, you know, busy always. We're always busy. We're just busy.
Yes. And you have had maybe a chance to recover from the beautiful concert that I saw that you did with Michael the other day.
Yes. And it was really remarkable because, you know, reading in the news about Detroit being bankrupt and like a third of the population is gone, and you know, you read about the dogs that are in the main part of the city, and you know, and I always am concerned about the morale of people when you go and visit places, you know. And what I discovered, which I always knew, but it just kind of reinforced that, was that, you know, people from Detroit are real survivors. They love music. They always come out and support no matter what. And, you know, we always have the audience is always so great there. I mean, they'll jump up, they'll start singing along and, you know, cheering us. So they really make you aware of what it is you do, and they help you appreciate that, you know, by their response to what you're doing. Yeah. So it was good. It was a really good thing because, you know, you always feel when you go to different places, you want people to be safe. You want them to be prosperous. You want them to have better lives, you know. And it can, you know, and you just always, you know, you want to be able to bring to them as much positive energy as you possibly can. And they had it. They had the energy there, so it was great.
You know, and look, when Michael and company, because you have been so integral, honestly, in the reason why people are so captivated time after time when they see Michael on stage, your presence, and he'll say this, you have given him a gift through the years. So that kind, honestly, what would he have done without you?
Well, I always feel that, you know, because we're all connected and we all have individual paths, you know, and it's amazing how, you know, things line up in a certain way. Because I've been recently reading about intention. Wayne Dyer wrote this book called The Power of Intention. And I'm like in the middle of that. And I, you know, you think of intention all the time, but I always assumed it was something else. I kind of thought of it more like willpower. But when things align themselves and we connect to people, that support is so amazing. I mean, all of the things that I didn't really believe I could do or, you know, had fear about or didn't have a true understanding, like songwriting, for instance, you know, by being with Michael has helped me understand that and to pull it from me, you know, because your, you know, mentorship is one of the greatest ways, if not the greatest way, to really learn something. Because now you have a person who does it and they're willing to share that information with you. And you kind of can see them as human beings, you know, because they're right there in front of you. You know, you can have these great mentors, like I could have a mentor like Martin Luther King, but I didn't know Martin Luther King. And so he seems more of this really great, you know, amazing person, but not as connected to me, say, as someone that I see every day or I can talk to or, you know, or deal with on a one-to-one. And I think it's important for us to have those kind of mentors in our lives that help us recognize our humanness, you know, the real thing of being human, you know, and yes. that the possibilities that we all have, the potential we have, that makes that more real. I don't know if that is making any sense, but it seems that it's so possible because they're right there. And Michael has done that for me. He's just a generous person, and he doesn't have an ego. And I think I mentioned that a while back.
Yes, you did.
Which, amazing.
Me. Yes.
Because today, you know,
wow.
in the industry, people.
Yeah. Oh, my God, look, we could be here for from now until next Tuesday talking about that.
Right.
Woo!
Yeah.
And, Veronica, you know what? To pile on to that, I have noticed this recently, and it's been both very sad, but yet illuminating and completely amusing to discover this. You will find, and you know this, that here's somebody who is utterly fantastic, has been a pioneer, creative, longevity, Michael Franks. And he allows himself to be accessible. When you have achieved a certain level in your career or in your generosity and your evolution, it's a no-brainer to be able to have someone reach out to you and you freely reach back to them. Do you know that in the past, like, few weeks, amazing people have crossed my path with no go-between, but just, hey, I heard that you wanted to talk to me. Let's talk. Gary Burton was one. Gary Burton.
Wow.
Yes. He wrote to me and said, hey, I hear you want to interview me. Let's set this up.
Wow. This is incredible.
Oh, my
That's
God.
Incredible. And yeah.
So he's going to be with me next Tuesday.
Yes.
And, you know, when you have people like Chuck Loeb who says to you after the concert, hey, you know what, Trish, just write to me. You have my email address. Let's set it up. No big deal because there's nothing that they have to prove.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is – and it's important – you're absolutely right. And the time has come, I feel, for all of us to be able to get information, you know, inside information. I think the thing, the driving thing that is behind my intention with this podcast is that giving of information, sharing of information that people can use and it can help them, especially in the industry with music and young people coming up and playing music, because the whole industry has changed so much. And so there is, you know, like I know, like in New York, there aren't a lot of clubs that people can play in, and there aren't a lot of the legendary people that are still alive anymore that you can just have an opportunity to sit in with, you know? So
yeah.
I think it's important for, I feel that young people who are playing music or who are about to embark on this kind of musical journey as writers or performers or singers or players, that they understand how each person, each musician plays a key part in the whole of the picture. We hear, like, you know, you hear of great people, you know, Herbie Hancock, you know, you hear of Chick Corea or Michael Franks, you hear all these great names, but there's so many musicians that play with these people that people don't know.
Yes,
you know,
they
know it. You know, we know it in the industry, you and I, because you know we're fanatical like that. No, but we know that. But you know, like one of the guests that I had asked to be on my show, and he agreed to do it. His wife is also the voice, the intro voice on my podcast, Buddy Williams. A brilliant, great drummer that is on everything. I mean, if you look at his discography, he is on everything. And you know, you can be sitting in a cafe or a restaurant and hear something, and you know, I'm having food with Buddy. He calls me Gumbo, and it goes, oh yeah, I was on that. Oh yeah, I was on that. You know, and so you take it for granted. You don't realize that these side men, so to speak, are the reason why the artists can elevate themselves in their career. You know, every bit of it is necessary. Every bit, musician, you know. And a lot of them don't have the names, but they are the real basis, you know, the strength, the bottom, as we say, for how all of this happens when you listen to music. So I think it's
completely.
Time for that now.
Yeah, you just said something really spectacular. And as a matter of fact, a little while ago, I played Gretchen Parlato and was talking
mm-hmm.
about the young jazz cats that she had on The Lost and Found. I mean, what these young people have done in the way of taking jazz to a population that maybe wouldn't have listened unless
mm-hmm.
they had the cool package of Taylor Eixde or Derek Hodge or Kendrick
mm-hmm.
Scott or Dana Stevens. All
mm-hmm.
of these names. I mean, we have to focus on what you have just said, the players that have played so much on so many projects, but these
mm-hmm.
young people moving in to create the new world that we need.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have to trust our hearts when we listen to the new people that are coming out and people that come out. Because I feel sometimes, you know, we are in a world where it has to be endorsed first in order for it to be appreciated. And,
right.
You know, because I don't know if it's because of self-esteem issues we all have that we don't trust our own, you know, heart and say, oh, I like this, you know.
That's
and
right.
To stand, you know, and to stand for it. I mean, to really stand up for it. You know, I have noticed in situations where, you know, I've seen it. People will like something, but they're kind of gauging what other people are saying about it. And they won't come out and just say, look, I don't know about you, but I like this, you know, because it really, music and art is subjective. It really is not, you know, what one man stakes another man's poison, you know, and we could be, I always use this example where, you know, I can go to a club and to hear somebody I've never heard before. And, you know, Travis and I could have had a fight. I have a headache. I have cramps. I feel horrible, you know. and just how I'm feeling will affect how I'm experiencing that. So I may not even like that person as much. Whereas on another situation, I could, you know, everything is great. You know, Travis is willing to spend a lot of money on me.
Yeah.
We're not talking about who's going to take the garbage out. Yeah, and everything is incredible. And I hear somebody, and they are the best thing I've ever heard in my life. You know, and it could be the
that
same
right.
person. Yeah, so because it is, it's very subjective. It a lot of it has to do with where we are at the moment, you know, how we're feeling, and also the artist's ability to reach out to us and pull us into their world. The better they are at that, the less our own problems are present. You know what I mean?
You are right. And you know what? You bring up another sort of thought that popped, which is that we need to honor the work of an artist the same way we need to value any other person who does any other thing.
Absolutely.
That's so important because we can't ever dismiss someone. I mean, I might not choose to play a particular song by a particular artist on this show because I'm not feeling it. But I take mm-hmm. very seriously in listening to someone and thinking, okay, maybe I'm not feeling it, but maybe someone else will.
Absolutely.
Veronica, there was this amazing little tale that Wayne Shorter told about Miles Davis, and mm-hmm. you'll be able to appreciate this more than most people. When Wayne lost his wife and his niece in that terrible plane crash in the 90s, mm-hmm. he wasn't sure if he'd ever get the footing to proceed. And he certainly had family and friends to lift him up. But he could hear Miles in his head, mm-hmm. and he perceived that Miles said, "Play your instrument. Play it. It will lift somebody up."
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I thought, wow, you know, it's so important when someone decides to play music. I've been really cavalier in through the years dismissing someone, and it's not my right to do that because people pour their heart and soul into instruments or their vocal abilities, and they might think, I don't have anything left to give as far as my mm-hmm. gift is concerned. And who mm-hmm. are we to say, oh, that means nothing? They play horribly, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Because we, you know, we can never know the content of someone's heart. You know, we can
yes.
assume that we do, you know, and sometimes what's on the surface gives us the impression that something is a certain way. But, you know, we all have our path, right? We all have our purpose, our mission for being here. And you can only do the best you can do. You can't do, you know, you can't, you know, I always tell people that I know, if you knew more, you would be using it. You know, if you could have done
yes.
better, you would have done better. You know, it's just, you're always where you are. And that
That's
in
right.
itself is really remarkable. And, you know, it takes guts. It takes guts to get up and sing in front of people and play in front of people. And, you know, and if you're really, you know, moving in that artistic direction, that's you're being very vulnerable. You're opening yourself up in a way that you would never. I know for myself, when I perform, I tend to open up more than I normally would with just people in an everyday situation, although as I get older, it's just easier because I don't have anything to hide. If you know what I mean, I don't have anything to hide anymore. Yeah, it's just like
yes.
okay, this is it. You know, and it's really nice to be able to just tell the truth. And when you're on stage, it's easy to do that, you know? It's very easy to do it. Because you're kind of in that camouflage, you know, people see you on stage and, you know, you can be as honest as you possibly can and they see you on stage and they might think it's, you know, oh, wow, you know, I really feel this. But it isn't as they don't judge your feelings as much as, say, if I'm, like, talking to you now and I give you a real hard truth. You know, sometimes people get very defensive. So I just think you have that to be able to perform, you have a better opportunity to be as honest as you possibly can, and without fear around it.
Isn't that funny? Did something register to you through the years of performing where you suddenly thought, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter so much anymore that people might not like me.
Yeah.
because I'm being fully me, and I'm doing the best that I can. I know that I have a gift. I'm giving it. You know, that is so empowering to get to that point where you say, well, that's a shame if you don't like
yeah.
me.
Well, yeah,
because
you got
there's 100 bazillion people who do.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing is, it's like if you are out there, there's got to be one person who likes what you do. I mean, no matter what it is, of all the billions of people, there has to be at least one person that likes what you do and one person that what you do affects them in a way that's in a good way. And that is a mission accomplished.
Oh,
because
yeah.
It's only a question of one to ignite the chain.
It,
you know?
It really is, and you get, you know, through the years, you must have had so many people come up to you after a show and say, wow, Veronica, if I had not heard you, I would have gone home and felt despondent. You brought me out of myself. You are just what I needed. When you start to hear that over and over again, the serenity just takes over. And you realize, you know what? This is what I'm supposed to do in life. How about that?
Right. Yeah, and it, you recognize your responsibility to your contribution to the world. You know, it doesn't even have to be in a massive way. I mean, even if it's just in your small circle, it's accepting responsibility that, you know, I'm connected and that, you know, as a Buddhist, our belief is that we're here as bodhisattvas to continue to incarnate until all people can reach enlightenment, until all people can recognize their true nature. And as a musician, when I you know, people would say, oh, you know, I really felt great at this show. You made me feel so great. I just love to come because I feel so good. And, you know, and of course the pressure is a lot. It's always, I'm a type A personality, so the pressure level goes way, way up. And then, but then, as you said, as time went on, I started becoming very comfortable with my mission. And it wasn't important for, it's not so important for me to have millions and millions and millions of people love what I do. If what I do can reach one person and empower them to take on the challenge of their life to where they understand and want to be happy and feel they deserve to be happy, then I've done my whole life mission.
Mm.
You know,
yes.
And that, you know, and so you just keep doing it. You just keep doing it. You keep doing it. And I think as long as we stay honest to ourselves, and as you had said earlier, not look on the outside of ourselves for that serenity, but first it starts with yourself. You know, it starts with being true to yourself. And then I think that whatever you do, it's not as important that a whole bunch of people love it. It becomes this wanting to connect, you know, because I feel when I connect to people from the stage, I can feel that energy when they give you back that energy. And it's nothing like it in the world, Trish. I mean, I'm addicted to it. And I tried to think that I wasn't. You know, I mean, there's a reason why we're all entertainers. I mean, come on, we got to be straight up with it, you know.
Oh,
most
yeah.
Most of us are geeks, you know. You know, we've had problems in school. I mean, I was horribly bullied in school. So, you know, it's
really?
Just, there's all these things, yeah, that you reach out to feel like you can get. You know, you want to be loved. You want to be accepted. And music, for me, has always been the one thing that there is no right or wrong on it or any judgment factor to it. As long as you give yourself to it, it reciprocates. It just gives it right back to you, and it builds you up even more. And through that, you know, the self-esteem rises and the confidence comes. And then you start, if you connect it to your mission, then you realize, okay, this can really be used to help other people. So
Wow.
That's my view of art, which may be a little too much.
Oh, no, it's beautiful. And, you know, it's you freely admitted that you're addicted to it, which is so hilarious, because I actually thought about this in a weird way the other day. If I can get a little bit of a natural buzz because I stopped my car in a place where I didn't have to stop, I stopped my car so that a mother and a daughter could cross. Now, the mother was an elderly African-American woman who I noticed was standing straight up tall. And I thought, you know what? She's walking slowly. Don't you dare move this car another inch until she and her daughter can cross. This woman looked over at me. She made it a point to look over at me and give me a smile that was worth $1 million.
Wow.
And that was a gift. Now, here's you on a stage, and you catch somebody's eye when you're singing, and that person has tears in their eyes because you have just moved a mountain in their soul. How much more of a buzz is it for you?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, that you know, when you are open and happy and give to people, that's very addicting. I mean, for me, I feel it's one of the greatest addictions that's safe to have.
the using of giving,
because it's. For so long, you know, when I was younger, I always had that scarcity mentality, you know, because society tells you it's, you know, there's only so much to go around. You know, you can only have so much, you know. Don't eat all that chocolate.
Right.
Cake, you can't eat that whole cake. So, no, I mean, but really, I mean, truly, we are taught that there's only so much to go around in this whole world. And that's really not true. But if we live our lives with scarcity, we feel like, oh, well, I can't give any more of my time and energy to this person because I don't have it to give. You know, I'm busy. I have this. We think like that. And so then we kind of delve out in fractions who we're going to give to and who we're not going to give to. But if you just smile at another person, you haven't lost a stranger. You haven't lost anything. You haven't lost. You haven't. You know, I mean, you haven't taken from a well that you have that's going to be empty. You know, because that person's going to smile back and just give it right back to you.
And it's the same thing. This is just imagining this, but after a show, if you are in a position where, you know, you've heard some people through the years who are celebrities. Oh, geez, I'm not going to sign autographs. After the show, I've done enough. When in actuality, you are cutting your foot off because the abundance of love that you get in those kinds of situations is so vast that it could carry you into next month.
Yes, absolutely. You're really gaining. And that fans are your employer.
Yes.
You know? We work for them, and if you don't have them, you don't have a job. I mean, I could sing up here in Woodstock all I want to my cat Willie, who, you know, is nice enough to listen, you know, because he loves me. But the point of it is that, you know, Willie isn't going to write a little cat check and give it to me so that I can pay bills. So, you know, it is. We have to think of it in terms of it's also how we make a living. And, you know, you honor people, you honor the fans by giving them, you know, doing your job, you know. And sometimes I think artists, really well-known artists, don't realize that that's part of their job. If not, then they need to go and be, you know, administrative assistant or do programming. You know, they need to do something else. They just don't quite understand what their job description is, you know. So,
ooh, yeah, and that goes back into the ego part of this conversation. Oh, my goodness. And look, here's a beautiful picture. And I wish I could describe it. I was thinking of how to describe it. I saw Brian Auger and Jeff Golub the other day in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
okay.
The first time that Jeff Golub had been on the road and being challenged now with his sight. It's
right.
Different for him.
Right,
so
right.
He's sitting there after the show, and I could tell because he's got – no filters now to figure out if he looks nervous. And he looked nervous.
Okay.
And
okay.
He is not sure now where he used to be able to see people. Now he can only hear them, and he doesn't know what people are going to say when they come up to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he looked kind of frail. And I just felt so compelled to put my hand on him and say,
mm-hmm.
Jeff, it's Trish Hennessy. And he just, oh, my God, Veronica, it was so beautiful. He just relaxed. He could, he breathed. And he said,
uh-huh.
Oh, Trish, oh, it's so good to have you here. I'm so glad that you're here. And just to hear the voice of someone that he knew,
yes.
And it was like, I asked God to give me more so I could just infuse him and give him strength, and I could see him perked up.
Wow.
And Brian is right next to him, and Brian knows me. So Brian said, yeah, Jeff, here's Trish. And it was just like a mission accomplished when
yes.
You know that someone is doing what he is supposed to do and just needed the little goad, the push to wake up and feel
yes.
that all is right in the universe.
Absolutely.
So awesome.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And that's actually what fans do. I feel, I feel as an artist sometimes, you know, you go out there, you might have all kinds of stuff going on in your life, and you know, there you can put your burden down, they say, you know, and
yes.
just immerse yourself into it. And people who come to hear you play or see a movie or read your book or whatever, it really does, reassure us if we let it, you know, if we allow, if we surrender. Because I think surrendering is the part of us as human beings that's the hardest. Because we think, oh, I'm losing, I have no more control. But you know,
oh yeah,
you know what I mean. It's a,
yes.
it's a strange thing because we have control, but we don't have control. It's always that paradox. We have that paradox in life, you know. So it's, you know, I love it. I love the entertainment industry. I love books. I love movies. I love music. And I also love what other people do, you know, that do it well, you know, architects and the people that program computers. I mean, a person who put together the phone lines make this possible, someone who designed blog radio. I mean, you know, that's just all
incredible
to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes so many things possible for us, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, and doctors, because we used to work with Johns Hopkins Hospital. You know,
wow.
how miraculous is it to perceive that these doctors get minuscule instruments to work on tiny children's hearts?
Right.
Isn't that...
Yeah.
To conceive of that,
yeah.
to have the presence of mind to think in your life, you know what? I'd like to do that.
Right, right.
Oh.
You know, yes, exactly. You know, or to be the person to say, okay, I'm going to invent and make this. You know what I mean?
Yes.
To make the actual instruments. Yeah, it's to me, it's amazing. It's how they, you know, I think on a more more basic. You know, okay, this is a song. It's in the key of G, and you know, but
yeah.
those are Those are like miraculous things, you know. Even people that dedicate their lives for health, for, you know, they go and they help people rebuild villages, and it's just everything is needed. I told Travis one time that, you know, so everybody has a job to do, and every job is important. Every job is important. You know, I don't really want to go and make chairs. You know, I don't want to cut down trees in order to make chairs. You know, I mean, I don't. That's not where my interest is. But I am grateful, especially now since I'm sitting on a wooden chair, of the people who actually do that. You know, that make that possible. So it's that interconnectedness is beautiful. It's beautiful.
And isn't it something when you're gathered around folks who are from varied backgrounds and you perceive what it is that makes them on fire when they discuss it? You can always tell where somebody's heart and soul is by the absolute breathtaking conversation that ensues if they get to talk about what turns them on.
Yes, the enthusiasm. Yeah, I mean, that is so incredible to watch. Their eyes light up, then they become very animated. And I'm always asking people, you know, what do you do? Especially when we're out with Michael and, you know, we at the end of the show, we'll come out and we'll sign some autographs. And I ask people, well, what do you do? You know, what do you like? And a lot of times they're really shocked that I'm even asking them, you know, but I want to know. I'd like to know what it is that they do, because I can a lot of times vicariously, you know, live their what they do through their description of it for me, you know. It's just a good life, show business. Show business is a good life, yes it is. And I mean, and I've been in other lives too, so a lot of different jobs I've had, a lot of different jobs. So I'm not a person.
You know what, Veronica? Let's just keep it real. You got to have been in the toilet to understand what it's like to be on top.
Oh, yeah.
Honest to goodness.
Yeah, I really do. And I know there's that belief system that, you know, and I've heard a lot of great musicians say you don't give yourself anything else to do but, you know, your music, you know, and, you know, you don't think of any alternative except your music. And that's great. I don't knock that at all, but I don't think that's applicable to everybody, because I feel like for me, because I learned how to do programming and building websites, because, you know, we have our own company. Our Full Gallop is our own company. We don't have a major label that gives us tour support. You know, I do my website. I put, you know, I upload everything. You know, I put together all the RSS feeds. I mean, I do all that myself, you know.
Yes, you do.
We're our own company. And I would never be able to keep moving Dead Horse Records, a part of Full Gallop and our LTH Consulting. We would never be able to move that forward if we hadn't done other things. I mean, I did other things because I like to be able to do what I want, you know, and that applies to music as well. I want to be able to make the kind of record I want. I don't really feel comfortable when, you know, there is a label saying, okay, you know, we want you to do 5 albums of standards. You know,
right.
Like, okay, well, I don't want to do 5 albums of standards, you know. I barely do 1 album of standards. You know what I mean? I'd like to be able to say, well, this is where I am right now, and I'd like to make this. So you trade off one for the other. And
yes,
if, you know,
do.
A major label were to pick me up, great, that's wonderful. But it's not imperative. You know, it's not it doesn't break us. You know, we're going to keep going and moving in the direction that we, you know, we want. So by doing all these different jobs really helped me keep building when everything has changed and the whole system has changed. you know, it's changed. There's no longer machines of record labels behind artists, and the whole PR thing is different, and everything has changed.
It has, and, you know, I hope that I'm not naive when I say this, but we have these discussions all the time, either on the show or when there are situations that allow conversation in clubs or after the club has closed or dinners with people who are involved in the music industry. And maybe I'll ask you, Veronica, and you can run this by the musicians that you know around you.
Okay.
Would it make a difference, do you think? And me being from radio and having done it since 1976, I really think that it makes a difference when you have an outlet whereby you can hear artists all the time. If there were 24-hour-a-day radio stations, and online is beautiful, and satellite radio is wonderful, the websites that people have to showcase artists like you and so many others, great. But if there were 24-hour-a-day commercial radio stations that were making money for people so that folks could hear pretty much every day, Michael Franks and Veronica Nunn and Chris Botti and everybody that's under the umbrella of jazz, that would make a difference.
Yeah? You think it would? In what way? I'm curious.
Because
it's...
Here's the thing. People moan about folks not going into clubs because they don't want to pay the ticket price for the artist they see. By golly, they'd be paying that ticket price if they could hear that artist on the radio consistently.
Okay.
Record companies lament because they have to pull back their staff because the jazz side of the record label isn't selling product. Well, they'd be selling the product if people, because we're also ADD, would hear the artist on an everyday basis.
Okay.
So
okay.
If we could focus energy into having these, in different cities, key cities, full-time radio stations that would play across the board all kinds of jazz, that would change the flavor of what you just said.
Well, you know, that's actually an interesting viewpoint on that. I mean, I knew that they had, you know, in the past they did have it, and it was very profitable for everybody because people were able to hear a lot of different artists.
Yeah.
You know, and I agree with you. I also feel another addition to that part of that with jazz. Or music maybe in general, but I know for jazz, and this always stems into the connectedness of everything, politically, you know, we don't have a middle class any longer. You know, the very, very rich who were sponsors, you know, and they were patrons of the arts, you know, their offspring, their interest, and I'm not knocking the Kardashians, okay, so don't get me wrong, and I won't be sued, but... You know, that's the kind of, you know, that's where they are. You know, that's what they prefer, a different kind of lifestyle and not this this patronage of arts in general. So now you have the rich and the offsprings that are not interested, and the ones that are dying off, there's no longer these foundations. And then you have the very poor who can't really afford what a ticket is. I mean, because sometimes the ticket prices are way, way up there. I always felt that the middle class was the real bottom for the country as far as, especially for jazz, because, you know, the husband and wife are working as, middle class, lower, upper middle class people. They could put together, you know, for a couple of tickets for them and dinner on their night out every once a month, you know, or they would go out and they could purchase things. And we don't have that anymore. We don't have a middle class anymore. And I feel that and there's not a middle class really anywhere else in the world. I mean, it's kind of all over, you know. And I feel that that's one of the main reasons why we don't, besides the being able to hear it and to have the accessibility, I also feel that, you know, the lack of proper funding for education that includes arts and culture in the educational system is another problem. Because
definitely.
In the arts and culture, yeah, you know, we could. That's a whole nother thing. That's something you know, they're giving funding, government funding to charter schools, but not to like our basic PS, you know, public schools, which I don't understand what any of that's about. But that, I think that is one of the main reasons, because kids don't have access to instruments and that kind of art and cultural education, and the fact that we don't have a middle class, or we've lost the middle class in this country. And with all of that together, not having, you know, radio that plays all these different artists. You know, it's the three of those combined seems to me to be a problem here right
you,
now.
You are right on those addendum points. You truly are. And the jazz education factor, it used to be, gosh, we remember these times now with absolute gratitude and wistfulness, because it was just assumed that when one would go to school, a kid would have the choice of having an instrument. And how many stories have we heard about different artists who have grown to be household names, who wanted mm-hmm. to play one instrument, but the teacher or the mentor would say, oh no, that we don't have any more saxes or trumpets, you have to go to a baritone something or other, or
right.
you have to play the fiddle. So
right.
now we don't have those stories, and kids don't have those choices because there are no programs in schools. That's critical. And where did we lose that thinking that when you played an instrument or had the opportunity to play one, that wasn't as crucial as learning math and English?
Right, exactly. And they're now, you know, wanting to put a lot of emphasis on, you know, math and science, which is fine, you know, but there's something about art and culture that provides young people with the ability to have discerning thinking, which means that it's not just an analytical way of looking at things, but they're able to filter through and balance these things out in their lives and what's true for them as a reality. So they can then you know blend it into their lives. They can blend it into their everyday existence, which I feel discernment is why that's the word for that. And art helps us mentally, and I guess how we process it, to be able to do that. Whereas the very analytical stuff, I mean, is great, you know, but nothing is decided ever in life from a logical perspective. I mean, people we'd like to think it is, but in reality, everything comes from an emotional place when we make a decision. We will try to put it together and make it seem like it's logic, but it never is. It never is that, you know. Like people go, oh, I'm going to choose a blue car because this car has this and this and this and this. But really deep down inside, it's these preferences that a person
you
has.
You just like it.
Yeah, exactly. And so you'll give all kinds of things around it to make it fit your logic. But, you know, they always say that in order to create something, there has to be emotion connected to that. You know, there has to be emotion to make something into a material thing in creating. And I feel that that's kind of why we, you know, what all our decisions, when we have this intention and we want something, it is emotional to get that, you know.
And you're so funny, because what you have just described, I'm smiling as you're trying to explain this, because you and I have the absolute right to discuss the intellect as well as the emotions, because both of us being Libras, we strive for that balance every
mm-hmm.
single minute of our day.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, always, because it's
always,
you know, and I think that's what makes you unique. You know, when I know you probably have the same issues, you know, they always think, oh, you know, Trisha's so, you know, she's thinking. She's such a thinking woman, you know. And then an emotional thing comes up, and then it's, now do I think about this or do I feel about this? And I have a lot of Libra in my chart. I have a lot of air in my chart. So emotion is very foreign to me. You know, as far as, like, whenever I'm talking, I never say, I feel that we should be doing this. It's always, I think we should be doing this. I don't use that word feel a lot.
That's interesting.
And, you know, and I struggle. I struggle with the feeling, you know, that I struggle with it. But with music, there is no struggle with feeling. That's the one thing I feel the safest in when performing, with singing. I feel safe in emotions with that. But everything else, I am always thinking about. I think about a lot of stuff. You know, I probably would be, you know, I remember when I first hit menopause, I would see, you know, a little cartoon bunny, and I'm like, look at that beautiful cartoon bunny, he's so cute. I would just get, you know, I was all over the place, and it was the worst time for me because I couldn't understand why everything was just so emotional for me, you know.
Oh, that was foreign to you. That's funny.
Oh, yeah, it was very fun. I mean, even like if I'm looking at a candle and it's, you know, the light on the reflection of the wall, it's just so emotional. It's so beautiful. You know, just I would get so out of control over it.
Well, you're right. You do pour yourself into music. You sent me this track several days ago. And, Veronica, I have to say, I have never gone this long in an interview without playing music, but I knew that you would do this to me. We were talking.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. This medley of tunes is so crazy because you make someone aware that even though you know in reality you weren't there, you are there. This was really precious for you to record this, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, because it was a different. I can't really describe what it is with, because these two songs are on different albums of Michael, and I wanted to put them together because I felt that they fit. They were actually perfect for each other in what I was trying to say. And I also think it has a lot to do with a kind of relationship, a kind of intimacy that people can have that isn't always necessarily husband and wife or boyfriend, girlfriend, but it's a real universal intimacy, a real inside thing that kind of touches. You know, I can't find the words to actually describe what I'm trying to say about it. It just, I liked the two songs a lot, and I felt it was an opportunity to say something in a way that could be felt because the way the music is, of course, the way the melody is written. And then Michael, you know, wrote this beautiful melodies, and he has these beautiful lyrics. Mm. And it's just like a basic thing, you know. It's like he's telling this story, you know, that's so basic, but it's two very powerful songs.
Well, you were meant to sing these two songs, How the Garden Grows and Vivaldi's Song. And are we hearing this? This was released in Japan, but not here.
Right.
Correct?
When I did the... Yes, I did The Art of Michael Franks, and it got picked up by a label in Japan, and they wanted an additional song on it so that they could sell that only in Japan. And that was under like a 3-year contract of distribution. So that contract is up. And so I wasn't able to release it here in the States, these two songs, and now we want to make it available, but it'll only be for digital download because I don't speak Japanese. It's very, very difficult. I'm still working on it to find those copies that I know the Tower Records in Japan sells it, and but you know I figured let me just make it available for digital download here in the United States. So this is actually the first time that anybody. You heard it, but you're me and Travis and Michael are the only people that have heard it. So
wow.
That's a mistake. So yeah,
that's awesome. I want people to inhale this and just close your eyes and make time in your day so that you can experience the song the way it's supposed to be experienced. Veronica Nunn, How the Garden Grows, and Vivaldi's Song on Hybrid Jazz.
Wind is hard to rhyme, we're prisoners in some icy pantomime, just waiting for the wind to change his mind and sing us green. To the trees, I hope when you plant the peas, Canterbury bells begin to ring. The sparrows are stealing string, hollyhocks and foxgloves to the knee. Now life's in a major key, we got mud between our toes. This is how the garden grows. Midnight in July, we see the season spread across the sky. We wake up to a nosy dragonfly. Intertwined. You know our love is just like summertime. Our souls collide, slip and slide. We feel no pain, and with our lives locked together, we weather the wind and rain. We grow the farm, we're safe from harm. Both of us know is our love. Lovers from the past, with hopes and smiles, I'll pray our love will never last. But we are trees, not vines.
That is right there. That's appetizer, entree, dessert, wine, and an attentive waiter all wrapped up in one. Okay? Phew!
Yeah, that's Jacques Schwartzbart playing tenor there, and he's amazing. He's amazing, yeah. And Sean Connolly's doing the bow. You know, he bows a section in that, so it's...
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's really, I like that song. I like those two songs, actually.
Those two songs. It's just a session in story time. You are transported. It's almost like you have great sorrow when it ends.
Wow.
Seriously.
Okay.
It's been a few times that I've heard this, and I get so used to being wrapped in it that when it goes away, it leaves me naked, and I've been wearing a towel for half this interview anyway, so... really wild to feel the connection to the song and then to feel like, whoa, I feel undressed. That's because you are. Veronica Nunn right there. How the Garden Grows and Vivaldi's song. Just a beautiful work of art, Veronica. Beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you, Trish, for playing it and, you know, supporting what I do and just, you know, having me on the show. It's just nice. It's wonderful. I love talking to you. And
I love talking to you.
You're amazing. You are amazing. You're so
no,
amazing.
No, you're more amazing.
No, seriously, because, you know, when you think about it, you can tell that you are this is a new phrase that we have on the road now. You're such a professional. That's our thing. You know, every tour we have a line that everybody says to each other all the time. And this line now is, you're such a professional. You really are. And you can tell that. You can tell that in how you interview. And I listen to your show and I take notes because I want to be able to, you know, be that type of personality and interviewer that makes you, you know, I feel so comfortable. I feel like I could just tell you anything, almost anything.
Oh, well, we'll work on the other stuff that you haven't told. Oh, there's much more to come. No, look, as far as I'm concerned, and I thank you for your abundant kindness, you are always welcome to come back. Just as we said last time, well, we'll have to do this in a couple of months. You know what? We're going to do it right around our birthday time. Yours is the 7th, mine is the 16th. Yes.
That would be lovely, absolutely lovely, because they have this on the stopbullying.org on October 7th. It's going to be Stand Up Against Bully Day, and that's my birthday. And I just think, you know, I'm going to go online and get the T-shirt so I can wear that T-shirt all day and you know,
wow.
I just think of it. Yeah. It's nice that people are actually starting to take action on things that has been happening forever and no one ever addresses it. But I would love to be back in October, and that'll be right
That's
before
great.
Japan and Indonesia, and I should have a couple more shows under my belt.
Oh, great. And look, I want people to know, I mean, we get so intrinsically involved with, you know, beyond the superficial conversation that a lot of folks could have. But Tales from the Jazz Side is alive and well, and you are feeling more comfortable, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And it's, you know, I'm not, as I said before, the A personality. I'm okay with it not being perfect. You know, I can sing and not even worry about that part of it, obviously. But, you know, other things I'm always worried about, whether it's not, it's, you know, is this coming off well or is everybody comfortable? And I just started back knitting. I always knit around this time. I always get into the mood. I want to knit a sweater. So, but I found this book called The Knitting Way. And it's a Zen approach to knitting, and she talks about using it as a meditation. And one of the things that all knitters have said to me is you have to let go of that idea of perfection, because it's the imperfection that makes, you know, the sweater beautiful, and it's the imperfection that makes a song or something you record or that you play or write. It's that's what really makes it beautiful. There's perfection in the imperfection, and reading that, it just kind of brought me back to with the show. You know, that is what makes, you know, that's what makes it real, and people can connect to it as something that's real, you know, because
correct.
There is,
that is
this
correct.
Little, yeah, and that's that, you know, that's a big, big eye opener for me, for the show, you know, not being so worried about, okay, it's done, let it go, V, just let it go.
Well, here's your image for that now, in knowing that you are fond of knitting and you have found a Zen approach for knitting. Dolly Parton, haven't thought about this for a long time, but she was quite poor in Sevierville, Tennessee, had a lot of brothers and sisters, and they could barely make ends meet. And she wrote a song called Coat of Many Colors.
Right.
And what her mom did was find patches of fabric, and she put together a coat so that Dolly would stay warm. And certainly that was not perfect, but it was made with such love that mm-hmm. she wore it proudly.
Yeah, yeah. That's
so
incredible.
There's your image.
Yeah, and that's what I will live off of. Yeah, because it's true. You put all the pieces together, you know, when you do a show or make a record or whatever, it's you put the pieces together, but you do it with a love. If you really love what you're doing,
yes.
that's the key. That's really the key.
Where is your heart in this? That's what it's
yep.
all got to be formed from, because nothing else matters. If you're doing it by rote, if you're doing it to be technically perfect, it loses the translation. People are dying in this world to connect with you.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, people are really dying to connect with people. I mean, each other.
Yes.
I mean,
it
can be a very lonely world when we feel we're so separated. I mean, in reality, in my belief, we're not. But, you know, that's always conceptually. You know, that's a concept. And it's very difficult sometimes. I mean, I'm sure with Christianity, too, with the writings that are stating, you know, in my house there are many rooms, you know, my mansion is many rooms. You know, you read these things, but, you know, to apply it to your life and to be real, that's really the hardest part. So we can conceptually feel like we're connected, but when you're sitting by yourself, you know, or you're at home, or you feel those moments, I just feel like I'm so by myself, you know, that's real. I mean, that's real for you at the moment. And any kind of book that you've read or any saying that says, oh, we're all connected, you're not alone, I mean, it's great, but, you know, it always boils down to what you're really truly feeling. You know, and how you act on that. So it's
well, you know, in times in trying to go through the years of the challenges that have presented themselves with my son, who's 21 now and was diagnosed mm-hmm. with Asperger's syndrome when he was 5 or 6.
Okay.
You know, I've had to think outside the box when there have been times when he was lamenting about something or feeling as if he was adrift or not fitting in or being bullied,
mm-hmm.
Veronica.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
I would say to him, here's what we'll do. We'll go to a hospital where there are terminally ill children,
mm-hmm.
and you befriend those children and find out what it means for you to be grateful for all that you have.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people don't, you know, we're so caught up these days in, well, I have to love myself first before I can love anybody else. Well, guess
mm-hmm.
what? The other side of that coin is when you show love to someone, you get love back that you feel as if you deserve.
Right, exactly. Exactly, exactly. And when you really truly love yourself, I mean, like, when you really accept yourself and love yourself, you really do give it to another person. You're able to really embrace another human being because all the barriers disappear. You know, when you truly love yourself, I believe we connect to that source, and it allows us then to realize that there are no boundaries. There aren't any boundaries that separate us. I mean, that physical thing is illusion. It really is illusion. I mean, you can break it down in quantum and go way, way deep, which I'm not going to do right now. Maybe another show. but you're right. It to reach out to, if you're feeling crappy, just go do something nice for somebody, and you'll feel a whole lot better. I mean, it never fails. It never fails.
Well, you know, when you get to the point where you say, okay, what is it that I should find out about myself that's lovable?
Yes.
Sometimes, frequently, I think of Mother Teresa and what she
mm-hmm.
did, because in our self-sacrifice, we frequently find ourselves. And what
yes.
it is that is of us that we give up to somebody else, then we
mm-hmm.
find ourselves more lovable.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And the point you made about gratitude, that's everything.
Oh, my gosh.
Gratitude is really, if you, like you said earlier, if you stop and think, as you had with your son and you guys went to see other kids in a different situation, if you stop and looked at your life and where you are and you were just grateful for it, your whole perspective changes. It just really, really, first of all, your depression disappears. I always feel like, you know, if you're sad and depressed, it's because you're not grateful.
Well,
unless it's a real serious chemical imbalance. You know, like, you know, I mean, if it's a serious chemical imbalance, then, okay, maybe not.
Yeah,
but
it's different, yeah. And
yeah,
don't even say to me that you're bored. Don't even say in front of me that you're bored. What?
Oh, man, people say that. Oh, yeah. Forget about it. Forget about it.
Forget about it.
I'm like, how can, you know, but people can. And, you know, it's important for us to accept, you know, to say yes, to say, okay, they are bored. They feel they're bored. As they see things, that's the way they're perceiving it. And, you know, we would like to throttle them, you know. We would like to show them the light. But sometimes, you know, you can't say any, you know, you can't do anything for. You can never live someone else's life. They have to do it themselves. I try to give people stuff to do. Well, if you're bored, can you help me do this? You know,
right?
And
take
then
your
all
mind
of a sudden
yourself.
They find something. Then they find something to do. They go, oh, you know what? I gotta go. And all right, see you
and
later.
Veronica, you said this earlier, and in actuality, what you said was what Maya Angelou said a while ago, which is, when we know better, we do better.
Yes.
So you have to get to that moment where the light bulb goes off in you. And sometimes we get impatient with people because light bulbs have gone off in you, and you say, well, why don't you know that? Because the light bulb hasn't gone off for me yet.
Yeah, absolutely. It's true. That's very true. And to just be okay with where everyone's life is, you know, how everyone views something, because, you know, the resistance is also the problem. When we resist things, we create more of a barrier. So it's, you know, I always feel our purpose is to guide, you know, to assist someone in their life. We assist them in finding that the switch for the light bulb, and because someone did that for us. I mean, inevitably,
yeah.
Someone gave of their time, or just an experience that they, you know, as they were living in that moment, and we're in their reality. That experience right there was a part of our learning lesson. And it, for me, too, it's very difficult because I'm a very – I tend to be – I'm an activist. I'm an activist, a peace activist, and there's so many times I want things to be in a certain place. But as I get older, as I've said before, getting older, I also see the value in why things move – at the time that it does, you know, in the time frame that it does, because we create, I really do believe, everything in this world, we've put it there. All of us have contributed to it being where it is. So if we take responsibility for that, we can change it. You know, if we keep thinking that somebody else did that, you know, we'll never be able to take any kind of action on our own part to make a difference. Because when you don't feel if you don't feel that you did anything to make it that way, then you won't feel anything to do something to not make it that way.
And that goes hand in hand with an attitude that we should no longer even give voice to, but it needs to be said in this instance, which is, it's not my problem. Nobody should ever say that anymore, because it's your problem, because it's everybody's problem.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. We can't. There's no way you can say, well, I'm staying out of all of this, even if it's just the way we think about it 24/7, because that energy of thought also puts things in certain places. You know, I always feel think love, feel love, you know, contemplate love, you know, your focus should be on love. You know, if we put our attention on things that empower, and love is the most beautiful of it, because it's what this whole world, I mean, all of existence is pure love. It's pure love because it's unconditional. You know, it doesn't play favorites. It doesn't choose this or not choose this. It knows when something should die in order to be reborn again as something else. I mean, that's the beauty of love. Love lets things go when it's time to let it go, you know? So I feel all of existence is this, you know, it's kind of threaded with love, you know, life is love, you know.
And there can never be enough. As you said earlier, you know, you just can't have so much and then feel as if you don't deserve to have any more. There is more to get. There's more to get, and there's more to give. So,
yes.
Gosh, you know, Veronica Nunn, we could do this all bloody day.
Yeah,
you
like a 24-hour jazz station. Like, but people would say, I wish they shut up and play more music.
Well, I do have a song, and I don't know what the circumstances are or maybe the particular arrow in the universe that points this way, but it's Long, Slow Distance.
Ah, yes, yes. Yes, that's
How about
a great
that?
One. Oh, yeah. I like that song a lot.
Like there wasn't any that were great on The Art of Michael Franks? Come on. They were all
fabulous. Well, you know, you have your... Well, thank you.
You are welcome. And, man, I just can't wait for the next session because this will take on a whole new flavor. You will have to tell us about your experiences as you were bullied coming up and I'll share mine. This will be
okay.
Sort of therapeutic.
It will be, and it'll be a perfect time in October because that's going to be the awareness month for, you know, stopping bullying. So we're right
that,
always in
man.
Sync and always where we need to be.
That is just incredible. My gosh, I'll be smiling about that for the next couple of hours. Woo! Well,
wow.
I just can't tell you enough what it means to have you on the show. It just means a lot, not only because we talk about music, but things that are so intrinsic to survival and to thrive. So there's nothing that's more important than talking about that.
I feel the same way. Thank you for letting me run my mouth.
I love your mouth. Oh, I really do. I love your mouth and what comes from it, and we'll hear it at our third take of that. So I just bless the day that you found out what you were supposed to do in this world. That's great.
Well, thank you, Trish. And also, when we get to Baltimore, we usually come in November, but we didn't come this year. But maybe we'll be there in the spring. And I'll bring my podcast. Have podcasts for travel.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I will have you on the show, and you can talk about. You can go into the basement with me.
Oh, great! Oh my gosh! Can I be the crypt keeper for that day?
You can absolutely be, definitely. I think your fans would really like to know, you know, some of the scariest things that have happened to you. I mean, not, you know, but in a good way, you know, in a way that enlightens, in a, you know, in the nature of the show. I think they would really, really want to hear that from you.
That's
they would want to hear
awesome.
You being interviewed is what I'm saying.
Well, thank you, Veronica. Look, you know what? Since we're coming from Baltimore, I'll just bring the spirit of Edgar Allan Poe with me.
Oh, I love that.
Yes.
I love that. Yes.
Yeah. We'll
and
have
I'm,
to get
I'm
you
from
a T-shirt.
The upper I'm in the East Coast thing, kind of high up. I'll bring Stephen King because he's my favorite. I love Stephen
Ooh!
King.
Ooh! All right. Ooh, I just got a chill. Wow. That's thank you, Veronica. That's going to be awesome. Yeah, we'll figure it out as we go along. Yeah,
okay.
Michael usually comes right around 11:11 in November, but mm-hmm. we'll figure out a way to see him and to see you in concert. I know that things will happen organically, and it will dictate
yes.
itself as life goes on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll be all ready with some good
yep.
stories.
Yeah.
But I will see you. I will not see you, but I will speak with you in October.
Yes, very good. And we'll plan a real big show. Maybe you can just hang with me for the couple of hours, and we'll just play music.
That would be excellent. I would really love that. Very much
okay,
so.
Cool.
And I just thank you. I just want to thank you again for, you know, all you do. You're wonderful. And I just want to say happy. Can I say happy birthday to somebody?
Yes.
Yes. I wanted to say happy birthday to Melanie Saval, I guess is how you pronounce her last name. She's Buddy's wife, and she does the voice on the intro on Tales from the Jazz Side. And today is her birthday, and I just wanted to. That was my little surprise for her, although she's, you know. She'll probably call crying. Oh, that was just so nice.
You're such a good friend. That's beautiful.
well, thank you.
Oh, my goodness. No, thank you. Tales from the Jazz Side is something that's very compelling, and I want to hear more and more progress with this because you've got something special there, and we want to make sure that we focus on that. So I'm blessing that endeavor. So there.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, and it's hard to say goodbye.
Oh, I know. I was just like going. I mean, all these things are going into my mind, and so I could bring this up, but no, we need to have fodder for all the shows in the future.
That is correct.
That's not
yes.
hard. But that's not hard. That's not hard with you because I follow you so much on Facebook and your comments, and it's incredible. And you're doing an excellent job in tweeting.
Oh, thank you. And I have you to thank for that, Veronica Nunn. So, yes, you have made me the master tweeter now.
I know.
The
way
mistress
that sounds
of
a
tweeting.
So
wait a minute. Okay. The mistress of tweeting. Okay. Well, no, that's not good either.
No. It's something about the way that sounds, you know. But in any case, it's great. It's really for you. So I do. I'm like,
oh, my gosh. Well, you have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you soon, and we'll make plans. And then after
okay.
October, we'll figure on a holiday show.
Yay. Sounds wonderful. It really does.
All right. Tell Travis hello.
Okay. I certainly
right,
will.
Veronica.
You take care, okay? And
you too.
Keep doing what you do. It's great.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thanks,
okay. Veronica.
Right. Thank you,
bye-bye.
Trish. Bye.
Veronica Nunn. This is hard. It's harder to say goodbye to Veronica than most anybody. Here she is from the Art of Michael Franks, Long, Slow Distance on Hyperjazz.
Some sprint to snatch the prize in. My goal's the far horizon. I guess I'm obsessed with that long, slow distance. Soft fleet of feet won't please you. Off speed they love and leave you. Not me, as you see, I love long, slow distance. For
we got them in. Yay! Two Groove School songs back to back. Oh, that was delicious. That from Limited Edition that was out a couple of years ago by Groove School. And just so you don't know, Groove School, S-K-O-O-L, GrooveSchoolBand.com has some more information. But within the mix, some superior musicians, Christian Demisones, who has been on the show a time or two, Kevin Grogan, Keith Anderson, Nick Costa, Mike Gamble, and on that track, Vanessa in Springtime. Oh my God, I love that track so much. The glorious voice of Lori Williams, ladies and gentlemen, who's got Lori Jazz, LoriJazz.com, to tell you where she is going to be. Woo! That was a real nice mix of musicianship and vocality. Love that song. And before that, The Bullfighter. This is the new scenario. Whenever we say that we're going to play a song and then don't, and you see the blue lettering on Facebook so as to indicate that someone expects to hear the song on another page, and they don't hear it that day, we'll make it up with two songs the next time around. Oh, my gosh. What did we hear? Yeah. We also heard Veronica Nunn. Oh, my God. Wasn't that fun? This is what we do. We just can't help it. It's that Libra thing that we have in common. Yeah. So we'll have our next session in October just in time for the big deal about focusing on non-bullying tactics and what we can do to stop bullying right in time for Veronica's birthday and for mine. It'll be a birthday gift for both of us. That's good. Let me tell you before we do anything else, and I'm going to play you one more song because I promised him that I would get this song on. I don't know what the circumstances are that would dictate that this would happen on the planet, but forces have combined on a global scale to make this possible. So on G House Jazz and More on Thursday, I will be joining host Gary Fuston and his band of renown, including our own Griselda Medina, yay, the Soul Stringer, and Ray Mack, yay, and we'll have a time of it. And it's actually by way of ghpradio.com, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Mountain, 6 p.m. Pacific. There you go. That's just so much fun. I can't even begin to tell you. Thank you, Gary and company. Griselda, I know that you were instrumental in this. Bless your heart. It'll be a lot of fun. We'll get to talk about radio stuff and what's happening in the music business and how we can make it better. We're not going to get all negative. We'll just try to lift it up so that we can maybe have some concrete suggestions on how we can all help one another to achieve our goals. And speaking of which, thank you again to Brett, who's got Blues Jazz Radio. You can hear the Hybrid Jazz shows 9 to noon from Monday through Friday. And that's a big help because it gets to spread the word about different kinds of acts. Now, this particular gentleman, he is not really considered, he does not consider himself in any way, shape, or form to be jazz, but his vocals lend themselves to a jazz umbrella, if you will. Just brought to my attention that this gentleman has something amazing going on. How does this happen? How does somebody pick out a particular voice and say that would be great for our movie? So you can hear Eric Scott and My Heart Belongs to You in the new movie with John Cusack and Nick Cage, The Frozen Ground, in which John Cusack plays a serial killer and he's listening to Eric Scott before he goes over to the woman he has tied up in his basement. I don't know. I'm just the messenger, okay? This is from Eric Scott's much-acclaimed Where the Water Runs Deepest CD. Loneliness is Speaking to Me on Hybrid Jazz. You'll enjoy this.
I've been left alone. I've been let go. Now that I'm on my own, it ain't feeling so good. 'Cause I've got nothing to change my mood. And for the first time, loneliness is speaking to me. And for the first time, I guess I wasn't listening before. For the first time, loneliness is speaking to me, and I hear it loud and clear. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I've got nowhere to go, no one I can call. Everyone that I know, they've already got their backs up against the wall. They've got things they need to do, which leaves me more time to think about you. For the first time, loneliness is speaking. I wasn't listening before. And for the first time, loneliness is speaking to me, and I hear it loud and clear. Yeah. Yes, I do. I hear it loud and clear. Getting through, wish that I could just forget about you. And for the first time, loneliness is speaking to me. And for the first time, I guess I wasn't listening. I wasn't listening before. I guess I wasn't listening.
Love that song. And just like Groove School before Eric Scott, all from the D.C. area. And it's always a pleasure to play local and regional folks that either sound national or should be national, a combination of both. It's just a pleasure. Eric Scott, Where the Water Runs Deepest, Loneliness is Speaking to Me. Ooh. We'll see you on Thursday with Nevo Dew, Shannon Kennedy, and UNAM. It's going to be a blast. Quite a different flavor for Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. That's all I'm going to say. You'll love it, hon. You're such a professional. I love Veronica Nunn's words. Such a great scenario to have her. Thanks to Matt and Griselda and Beach for being in the chat room, and we'll see you on just around the corner, actually, on Hybrid Jazz. God bless, and thank you.